Today it's my pleasure to be talking to Sarah Morris, and I'm sitting in Can Reyes Hotel in Fornalutx, and I have the most glorious view in front of me. And Sarah, this is Sarah's hotel, Sarah's family hotel, and this is the place that she has many fond memories of, and today she's interrupting her holiday to talk to us. Welcome, Sarah, to Boat Radio.
Thanks very much for having me.
Now, we've got lots of things in common. We love this place, but we have your mum in common. And your mum is Sue Lloyd-Roberts, and she and I had a number of occasions where we worked together on articles, and she was one lovely lady. And all we can say to you right now is that we're so sad that things worked out the way they did. But here we're talking about her legacy, and you're part of her legacy, and particularly as you finished her book. Tell us about the War on Women.
The War on Women and the Brave Ones Who Fight Back was Mum's book that she's left us, and she was writing it before she died. And fortunately, she'd finished about 90% of it. She worked really hard in hospital and through her treatment to get the book done. It was actually, I think, quite a nice distraction from the cancer, something to do every day. So when she died, I kind of set about putting together the final bits. What was left to do was an introduction, and also she didn't finish the final chapter about the gender pay gap in the UK. And the book is, each chapter is a different so-called war on women. So there's a chapter about FGM, a chapter about honour killings, a chapter about women's rights or lack of in Saudi Arabia. And they're all collections of stories that she'd gathered through her sort of 40-year career. And she'd always wanted to write a book about her experiences as a human rights journalist. And one day she was at the 1 billion rising rally in Trafalgar Square in London, which is a yearly event held to draw attention to women's rights around the world and abuses. And it suddenly sort of dawned on her how crazy it was that 51% of the population are women, and we were still, you know, having these rallies. And it kind of gave her the idea to pull together all her experiences and write a book about the war on women.
And in your own investigations here and what you added to it, did you learn anything, or were you with your mum on every step of this journey? You knew all these stories, presumably.
No, I learned a huge amount, and I think the main thing that comes across through the book that I learned is kind of how angry she was, and particularly with the BBC and her television reports. You have to be quite balanced, and you know, we don't offer opinion, and it's a very much telling factual stories. But with the book, she really kind of lets loose about her opinions on all the stories she's covered, and that was the kind of that's what makes this bit very different and fascinating, because she did have a lot of opinions.
Yes.
And she was very angry, and the main thing I think she was angry about was the number of times she would interview people, and she would, things like honour killings and FGM, she would continually be told that these practices happened around the world in the name of tradition, when in her eyes it was very clear that it was murder and abuse. And she was just exasperated that it was continually explained away in this way. And also, I think she was quite angry with the government in the UK for, you know, there's this kind of worry that perhaps you're being racist if you're if you say that honour killings are a terrible practice, and it's kind of, we have to be very respectful of cultures, and she didn't have any truck with that.
Mm. No, I mean, I remember a discussion I had with her very much on the FGM story, and she was just, well, I mean, incandescent with rage about the number of, the lack of prosecutions in this country. And this week we've heard on the radio exactly that again, the UK has been berated because it doesn't matter what they say, nothing has actually happened. And, I mean, do you know where she was as far as that particular issue was concerned? I mean, was there more going on behind the scenes?
Well, actually, FGM became her kind of her cause towards the end of her life. It was something she really, really campaigned on. And before she started talking about it in the UK, people really didn't even know what it was. And people wouldn't... Other journalists that I've spoken to said they'd kind of talk to newspapers and the BBC about doing programmes on it, and we're always told we can't talk about women's clitorises on, you know, in the media, you know, and then we just didn't touch it. It wasn't something that we talked about, and it was because of her that people actually know what it is now. She drew so much attention to it. She got Newsnight on BBC Two to do an entire 45-minute programme about it, which was just unheard of, and because of her, it was people started talking about it in Parliament, and just much more awareness. And I think the main campaign she had was she went and made a film about it in France, where they look at it very differently. And in France, every four-year-old, no matter where you're from, is checked at school. And she was kind of showing how different and how kind of that would never happen in the UK, and just kind of, you know, this idea of us kind of worrying about cultures again. But the main thing is she got the conversation going.
Well, the conversation was very much there. I think France is the only country that has actually taken successful prosecutions on this as well. So they are leading the game. But, I mean, this is such important work. Has anyone taken it on further for her now?
Well, I think this idea of prosecutions, it is important, but it's more prevention. Yeah. Than prosecution, I think, yeah. and education. But I mean, the problem with the issue is that so many children, even if they're born in the UK, they'll be sent abroad to have it done and then come back. So therefore, the UK government, we've got no, we can't enforce anything because it's not necessarily happening in the UK. It's happening to UK children.
But I can remember a conversation with your mother where we were talking about the human rights aspect of this, that even if that was the case, and children were taken to other countries for this abuse to be practiced on them, they came back. They came into the English law of child abuse. There's a whole raft of legislation that could be, you didn't even have to have new legislation for this. It exists, and it was just that there is nobody with the stomach to use this authority and go for this, because it's such a big, big problem. What's your view on the gender gap? I mean, that's the part of the book that you finished, isn't it? So what's your views on the gender pay gap, which is also another very current issue?
Yeah, I learned a lot about the gender pay gap in the UK that I didn't know, that was really shocking. I mean, you know, thinking about the UK, we're a country that, you know, Emily Pankhurst came from, we had Margaret Thatcher, but we're still way behind so many countries in the world when it comes to paying men and women equally. One thing that's changed recently is companies are going to have to publish how much people earn. That kind of that idea of transparency might hopefully make a difference. Theresa May's been very vocal about it, something that she wants to address in the next generation. The kind of complicated thing about that chapter was Mum had left little paragraphs about what she wanted to talk about in each chapter, and in that one she talked about her own career and motherhood, and how her regrets about motherhood, whether, you know, I mean, because that's kind of the reason often that women earn less, unfortunately. So a lot of the chapter was kind of looking at our relationship and thinking about her regrets and the fact that actually I feel that I benefited a huge amount from the fact that she worked and I didn't suffer as a child, even though my mother worked. So, you know, I think women can have it all and should try.
No, I mean, this is another conversation, in fact, about you that I had with your mum. And she talked to me about the walks that you did and the mountain walks and the holidays and the different things that you did. And she's absolutely, completely besotted with you. And from her perspective, she did feel very guilty about working. But she said one of the things that she wanted most from the kind of work that she did and the way she was able to organise her time was always to be there for all your school functions. I presume she did. She was always there, was she?
Yeah, I mean, I think she, you know, a lot of women in high-powered jobs may have to work really long hours during the day and aren't home till very late. And because of what she did, she was away, you know, perhaps for a week, 10 days. But then when she was back, she was really through everything at being a mum. And we did have the most amazing experiences, me and my brother George, because of her. She took us around all over the world with her. You know, I've travelled to India, Africa, Tibet, Nepal, places where when I was a teenager, you know, most of my age had never been. So we were really lucky.
And what about your walks? You're all mountaineers, aren't you?
Yeah, we climbed Kilimanjaro in Tanzania together. We went up to Everest Base Camp. I mean, that's one thing that really drew her to this part of Mallorca, just looking at these mountains here. She just loved nothing more than stomping in the mountains. And, you know, we did it with her. It was something we all enjoyed together.
Well, when she came here, she had, from what I remember, she told me that she just wanted to have a complete change. And so that for a little while, she took time off the campaigning trail and the journalistic trail and became a hotelier and washed up and served up and was polite.
Yeah, I mean, I think the kind of journalism that she did was, she saw some really harrowing things. And I remember, I think it was particularly one story that she was doing about in Romania, about orphanages and babies. And she went on this trip to Romania to show how easy it is for Westerners to go and buy babies. She just found herself bawling her eyes out. And I think she came back from that trip and realised that something had switched and it was all coming out, all the years of awful things, and thought, actually, I need a bit of perspective on this journalism business. So coming here was a break. And actually, I think she stopped working for a bit, and really she did find it difficult to relax. Actually, out here, she managed to really relax, and she changed quite a lot from being in Fornalutx, and then had a bit of a renaissance in her career later on, and did some of her best work afterwards. And I really think it was from being here in the wonderful lifestyle.
That's fantastic. But you touched on Romania. The hotel here right now is run by her connections from Romania. I mean, this was a lady that gave so much back. Tell us how her Romanian connections ended up here in Fornalutx.
Well, the staff here are all Romanian, but they were here before she arrived. So it was it was kind of coincidence. But she did a lot of work in Romania, and she actually, there's an orphanage there that she used to give a lot of money to and help the children, and they all came out to stay here for a couple of times, which was fantastic. And she was very good at, she used to give 10% of everything she earned every year to the causes that she'd been reporting on, and she would never kind of just leave the story. It was always, she'd come back to the UK and she did a lot of fundraising, and she held big parties to raise money for lots of different causes.
My abiding memory is that she was so polite. Did that facade ever crumble? She might have been angry about causes, but she did it in a very polite way.
Yeah, and I think that was kind of one of her many sort of weapons in her tool bag, that she would disarm people with her politeness. You know, she's some wonderful interviews where she's actually quite arch and clever in the way she asks questions, but because she's speaking so politely, people kind of don't realise. And that was actually a really good way of getting good interviews. I think she used it to her advantage.
The other fascination that that I got from one of our times together was her cross-border stories, where she would turn up as a hapless professor. Do you remember some of these?
Yeah, absolutely. And she used to, ironically, she used to use being a woman as, you know, a really good way of getting into places. And she'd go to places where women have absolutely no status, or so guards and border control would never think that they were capable of doing anything, and she would burst into tears and say, pull out photographs of me and my brother and say, you know, I'm here on holiday, what war, I don't know what's going on. And you know, she would just use whatever she had to get what she wanted. And I think being a woman really, really helped in that way. And in terms of the disguises, she used to really enjoy, she got a real kick out of pretending to be what she wasn't and really put a lot of thought into it.
So does she have a wardrobe of disguises then? What, right here?
Well, yeah, and I mean, when she went to Syria, she had this whole backstory of, she went to Oxford University and met with professors and had this story that she was researching Byzantine history and had, you know, all the books with her and phone numbers for people to call in Oxford to back up her story. And it was all really well thought out, and she kind of dressed and tried to make herself look like an academic, and It was real characters. She was a good actress.
She's a very good actress. And then apparently some of the subterfuge went here. I understand that some of her business cards and stuff were printed in the Solia Valley that she took with her to some of these places.
Yeah, that's right. She'd get business cards printed up in Solia, and you know, guests would often come down and find her kind of on the phone making up identities, and it was a lot of fun.
Yeah, yeah. And what about your own career then? Did your mother's career influence yours?
I mean, yeah, I'm a journalist as well. I'm still quite in the early days of my career, but I do feel that she had quite an exceptional career, and I think if I achieve kind of half of what she did, that would be something. But I'm certainly influenced by the way she worked as a journalist. I'm not sure I'm as brave.
And her bravery, how did that also come across when you were children? Was she feisty as a mum?
Absolutely. She just had no fear. She always used to say that she went to a very posh boarding school called Cheltenham Ladies College, and there was a marble corridor that you weren't allowed to run down. And she used to say that she's been running down the marble corridor ever since. She just loves to break rules. If there's a rule, you know, she'd want to break it. If we were on holiday and swimming and you couldn't swim beyond a certain point, then that was a red rag to a bull and she'd be off swimming.
But with that kind of anarchy in your household, I mean, what was everyday life like?
It was a lot of fun. You know, there was, wherever Mum went, you know, fun and mischief followed, really. She liked being mischievous, and I mean, I wouldn't say it was anarchy, but
not far off.
No, we were allowed to do pretty much what we wanted, but she, as well as, you know, having that hatred of authority, she was very principled and very, you know, taught us to be kind of kind and inclusive, and that all those sorts of things were really important to her. And you know, we weren't allowed to be nasty to people or, you know, any of that kind of thing. It was, we were taught to be polite and respectful as well.
Were you here the day the Guard de Seville came in to arrest your mother?
No, I wasn't, thank goodness. That would have been a real embarrassing, embarrassing mum story. But I do love that story. No, I wasn't here for that.
Oh, do tell us that story.
So, as I understand it, a guest was coming to the hotel and arrived with a taxi driver who was dropping them off and was asking for a fee that Mum decided was too much, so she refused to pay this taxi driver, only to have the Guard of Seville come back and fine her for gross insubordination.
So you live in Fornalutx and you are fined by the Spanish police for gross insubordination. I think that's absolutely fantastic. Just sums her up, really, doesn't it?
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Well, so what are your memories here? So you came into the Fornalutx world when you were a teenager, is that correct?
Yeah, my parents bought Canreus and the house next door when I was 18. So I first came out here, I think maybe 2 years before, because they used to come to the house every year. They knew the previous owners who they bought it off. And I remember first coming here when I was about 16 and just thinking it was absolutely the most beautiful place. So peaceful and just full of interesting people. And I love the beaches and the mountains, and then I came back for most summers since, really, and I've worked in this hotel, I've worked in bars in Port de Soyer, and I absolutely love it.
So is this a place you will continue to come back to? Is this your second home?
Yes, definitely. I'm having a baby soon, so we'll hopefully bring the baby out here and keep mum's memory alive.
Well, congratulations. So when's the baby due?
Baby's due in February.
Ah, right. So you go. So this is one of the last holidays. There's just going to be the two of you then.
Exactly. We're making the most of it.
Yeah, very lovely, lovely. And so your other life then, your own career is based in London, and is that something that is broadcasting? Something you're continuing with, or are you writing as well?
Well, I really enjoyed writing Mum's book. It was a fascinating experience. So maybe something in the future. I'm not sure about what yet, but at the moment I'm enjoying my career as a radio producer.
And looking forward to your new career where you're going to be the fun mum, huh?
Exactly, yeah. Yeah, try and channel some of Granny's fun into the new baby.
Oh, I'm sure you will. But if we can just come back to the book now, how's it doing, the book?
The book has done incredibly well, much better than I ever could imagine. It was, I think the first week it was out, it was number 25 in Amazon's bestsellers. And just to remind people, it's called The War on Women and the Brave Ones Who Fight Back. And it's just full of inspirational stories from Mum's career. And it's a real kind of call to arms, I think, for women and men about how much left there is to do around the world for women's rights. Do buy a copy.
And Sarah, what's your view overall about the status of women? I mean, yes, you have your mother's influence and the book, which must be creating your own thoughts, but you, in your own life as a journalist, you're coming across exactly the same stories as she did. So, I mean, what's your view of the future of women now?
Well, I think one thing, lesson from this book is how much more there is to do, and how you sort of, well, yes, we have come a long way, particularly in the UK, and, you know, my generation can do things that certainly my grandmother and couldn't, and we are a long way, but, you know, this kind of in-depth misogyny that is still really pervasive in so many different societies, you know, and I think it is kind of about education and change and just pushing the boundaries of what's possible.
Well, I think that we're going to watch your career with interest. The best is yet to come, I'm sure. You've got there's a huge career in front of you, and we're very glad that you've shared this time with us today. It's been great to talk about your mum. It's been equally great to meet you, and we wish you all the best with the baby and the future, and thank you for joining us today on Boat Radio.
Thank you for having me.
All the nice girls.